What's up, everybody? Long time no see. This is Michael Key with the RCT podcast. It's been a while. It's been a while since we've done a recorded episode. We had been doing YouTube videos and trying to grow that channel. By the way, if you haven't subscribed, go to RCT Network on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@RCT Network and subscribe. There's also going to be a video on a lot of the stuff that we talk about today. And again, we're trying to grow on all platforms. So why the hiatus? Why has it been so long since I've done a recorded podcast episode? Well, had a lot going on in life. All good. Went out, got married. I am currently in Australia right now. That is where my wife is from. And we'll be back and forth between Australia and the United States. So, good news. Just got back from the honeymoon. Went to Alaska, which if you haven't gone to Alaska, I think should be a bucket list destination for everybody. We were blessed and were able to go and see not only the peak and summit of Denali, which is only visible about 30% of the time. We got an ultimate clear view of Denali, got some great drone footage. Maybe I'll put it up on the YouTube channel so everyone can go see it. But also that same night, we were able to see the Northern Lights. And guys, it is one of the most spectacular things you could ever imagine. It's downright incredible. So if anyone ever gets the chance, go visit Alaska. Absolutely beautiful. I didn't want to leave. I wish I could go back and live there. You know, I know it's cold, but hey, I think I could tough it up because it's just, it's gorgeous. Can't go on enough about that. Some other news. I was contacted and we should have some sponsors for the podcast as well. So we are just waiting on some confirmation with that. And yeah, so like I said, all great news. We're going to start doing this regularly again every day. And there will also be videos. So if you want to see the video version, there'll be short clips. Go to the YouTube channel. I can't stress that enough. Also, go follow us on Twitter, which is at RCT Podcast on Twitter. And go follow us on Twitter. Now, today I want to talk about something that is extremely important. And it's not stressed enough in our news. And the problem is that eventually, probably sooner than later, it's going to have a very drastic impact on our lives. The U.S. is at risk of defaulting on its debt as early as the beginning of June. Now, the debt ceiling is currently on the negotiating table, and Republicans want to see spending cuts while the Democrats want the debt limit raised without having to cut any of their outrageous spending. Many of us have taken out loans before. And many of us have paid back the debt that we've incurred. Some of us have probably even experienced default or bankruptcy because maybe we somewhere along the line lost the ability to pay back our obligations. Regardless, as a normal human being, you are expected for the most part, with the recent exception of, you know, student loan debt, to pay back your debt obligations. But let me give you a scenario and break down what's happening with the U.S. government. Now, imagine if you could take out a loan to buy a car, and the terms of the loan were you only have to pay interest during the term of the loan, and principal wouldn't have to be paid back until the end of the loan term as maybe like one lump sum. You believe that your current income will be enough to make these minimum interest payments. Now imagine that you are in a situation where you have kind of borrowed outside of your ability and income level to make the interest payments on the loans, let alone pay off the entire balance of the loan or the principal amount at the end of the term. So now you have to go and take out another loan to pay off the first loan. The new loan has the same provisions. But you have to take out a larger loan amount because you still have interest payments to pay off on the first loan plus the principal amount. And now you owe the new loan plus interest as well. So you already couldn't afford the first loan. You now can't afford the second loan. And on top of that, you have to purchase another car for your, let's say, significant other so that they can drive the kids around while you're at work. So what do? Is, well, you still have your loan, original loan that you had to refinance. You still can't pay that off. So you go take out another larger loan to take care of the second loan. And then you have to take out another loan for a new car. Again, you're still in the same situation. And you are in this never-ending cycle of having to borrow more money from someone else to pay off the person before. You are basically borrowing from Peter and Paul to pay off Josh. And you're in this never-ending cycle. Now, luckily for you, you're the biggest and baddest motherfucker to ever walk the earth. And since everyone is so scared of you, including your own family, no one will turn you down on a loan request. Therefore, any outsider you go to ask for money sees that everyone is continually willing to lend money to you. So you must be a pretty reliable individual to ever, like you must be the most reliable person in the world, right? If you didn't know who you were, you see that, oh my God, everyone is willing to lend this person money. Lend. They must be paying it back. So I'll lend money too. And you know, they said that they're going to give me interest payments and pay off the total amount that I owed or paid them, you know, and let's say in a matter of 5 years, whatever the loan term is. You see it as, well, I mean, hell, that looks like the safest investment in the world. So you lend, or not you, but you're, you know, you're the one collecting the money, but someone, people keep lending you money. Throughout this never-ending cycle, you've now taken advantage of everyone being so naive, and you've purchased, let's say, you know, 10 new homes, 4 new sports cars, a security detail, and some property in other countries, most of which is exclusive to you, and not even your own family is allowed to utilize them. This is a broad example of what the U.S. federal government has done and why the national debt is so high. The problem now is that people are starting to catch on, and they are close to putting their foot down. However, since the U.S. economy is so large, risking a default could be absolutely catastrophic, not only domestically, but around the entire world. The CBO predicts that a U.S. default could cause 10% contraction in GDP and up to 11% annualized inflation. Furthermore, the unemployment rate could jump upwards of around 7%. I think it would actually be higher. So why don't they just, you know, keep increasing the debt ceiling and just avoid it altogether? Well, in my opinion, they probably will. But as long as you have two sides in Congress pursuing their own interest, they'll continue to use the debt ceiling as political leverage, especially since both sides have increased it at one time or another. That being said, increasing debt isn't really a good thing. As you continue to borrow, it becomes harder and harder to pay back your creditors, and the lenders expect more back from the money that they're giving you. Therefore, they will continue to bid up interest rates on the U.S. treasuries, and at some point, the debt ceiling won't even matter. U.S. treasuries go to an auction every week, and as interest rates go up, the value of the bonds fall. So it works inverse. When interest rates fall, the value of the bonds rise. If you, let's say you bought a U.S. Treasury bond and you have a par value and you have an interest rate, the interest rates on these bonds increase, your par value, the bond falls below that par value. Let's say par value is $10,000 at a 4% interest rate. If interest rates go up to 5%, maybe the bond goes to, like, let's say $9,000. So this is what actually happened to these big banks that just collapsed. Silicon Valley Bank, what was the other one? First Republic, there's another one. Is they were holding large amount of hold to maturity U.S. debt obligations, U.S. treasuries. Hold to maturity means that they were going to hold them the entire length of the loan, let's say, or the term on the debt. Let's say it was 5 years or 10 years, whatever it is. They were going to hold them until maturity. Maturity is whatever the date that thing ends and they get their money back. Until then, they were going to collect interest payments. Well, since rates have been increased so high, the value of their treasury holdings completely collapsed. And where they thought they may have had $80 billion in U.S. treasury debt, now they may have half of that. So they're earning interest on half of the amount, and they have nothing now because they were lending money out based on the value of their treasury holdings. And they, you know, you see where I'm going with this. U.S. treasuries are the safest investment in the world. They are backed by the faith and credit of the United States. Now, in the 14th Amendment, it says that the U.S. debt shall not be questioned. This is possibly going to come into play here in the next couple weeks with Joe Biden. I was just reading, I'll read you an article here in a second, talking about how they could, you know, possibly take care of this scenario without increasing the debt ceiling. But here's, I want to go into something else though. Why is the debt kind of, it only seems like it's important every once in a while when this debt ceiling comes into play, you know, when it's time to increase it. And the reason being is because they don't really look at it as the total debt. Let's say the total debt's $30 trillion. The government is not looking at it, oh my God, we're $30 trillion in debt. And that's, let's say, 30% of our total GDP. The GDP basically is the whole value of the country. And I'm just speaking to people who kind of don't know these terms. I'm just putting it into layman's terms, right? GDP is basically the entire value of the country. Now, they used to, prior to the Biden administration, measure whether we were in a recession by having two negative consecutive quarters of GDP growth. So if GDP fell two consecutive quarters, that was considered a recession. That means the value of the country fell two consecutive quarters, which recession means to recede, right? To fall back. And therefore, that was a recession. Now they have completely redefined that, which is foolish. But they look at the debt in terms of debt to GDP ratio, kind of. And as long as GDP is growing and it's kind of outpacing the growth of the U.S. debt, then they perceive it as, well, yeah, we have more debt, but the debt obligation has actually fallen. One way they can get around the whole, oh my God, we're in so much debt talk, is inflation. You see, inflation politically can be bad and economically is bad. But politicians actually can use it to their advantage, especially the Democrats, because what was inflation, 8-9% annualized in the past year or two? And that's not even counting gas prices and food prices. Well, when inflation increases, guess what else increases? Tax revenue. Guess how they get revenue to try and pay off some of this debt? Taxes. Guess also what it does. If you have inflation that's higher than normal, but at a point where it's not really impacting GDP growth, it may have slowed GDP growth. Maybe we were averaging, I don't know, 2 or 3% GDP growth every year. Maybe we're at like 1.5% or 2% this year with high inflation. It actually, in that inflation rate that's higher than average can actually boost or artificially boost the value of the country in the GDP. And since it boosts GDP, on paper, GDP is higher. And GDP to debt is therefore not as bad, right? Because the GDP growth, because of inflation, has outpaced the debt. They also use this to reduce the deficit. When you hear Biden saying, oh yeah, we reduced the deficit by whatever, right? They didn't reduce their spending, not at all. In fact, they're spending just as much or more than the year of COVID in 2020 with all the stimulus packages. They didn't reduce spending, but because of inflation and tax revenues that increased, remember, the deficit is just the difference between revenues and spending on an annual basis, you know, for that year. If you bring in more revenue than you spent, then you are at a surplus. We haven't had a surplus, I don't believe, since Clinton. But if you can reduce the deficit because of inflation, because inflation brought in higher tax revenue. Remember, a lot of people overlook consumption tax. If you have inflation, a lot of people get paid more money because inflation will increase salaries. On a relative scale, you're not in any better position when you're making more money. You know, you got a raise because of inflation, but everything costs you more. But since prices go up, consumption tax goes up because you pay a percentage, you know, for the consumption tax. Whether maybe in your state it's 10%, I don't know. But if it's 10% of $5 and now that same good the next year is $10, you still pay 10% of $10. That means you just paid, you know what, 50 cents the year before in a consumption tax, and now you just paid $1 in consumption tax. So it doubled the tax revenue that the government brought in for that product. Therefore, their revenue has increased and outpaced whatever they are spending. When the government looks at this, they're saying, oh my God, we're spending a lot, but we're bringing in more, so we can spend more. Instead of looking at it like, well, we're bringing in more, why don't we pay off some of this debt that we owe and put us in a financially better off position for the future? No. Especially the Democratic Party, who's just like, well, we need to spend more money, period, regardless of whatever it's on. Like, who knows what the hell they're spending money on? And it's getting to a point where, guess what they're going to have to do? They're not going to have to just go on their campaign promise of taxing the wealthy. They're going to have to start really taxing everyone completely, like way more. And now what the other thing that's overlooked is inflation, them kind of, you know, they say, oh, we want to bring down inflation. We want to bring down inflation. They get on Jerome Powell for increasing interest rates, which is what you do when you're trying to reduce inflation. So they really don't want to reduce inflation. They kind of forgot where I was going with this. Have to start taxing everybody more, because what they're also running into is tax revenues weren't as what they were expecting. They weren't as high. Now, the Biden administration has passed several policies that have increased taxes on the wealthier class, yet they're collecting less tax revenue. Who the fuck would have known that would have happened, right? Obviously, it does. I've preached this. All the top economists in the, you know this. You can't just tax the rich and expect to get more money. You don't. You can't. You really can't even increase tax rates and get more tax revenue. Generally, tax revenue is around 17% of GDP, regardless of tax rates. But usually when you lower tax rates, you'll get some more revenue because people are spending more money. They have more. And when you increase tax rates, guess what people do? They're not working as much. They don't want to pay taxes. People don't like to pay taxes. And this is from my personal experience that I have working with people as their financial advisor. People don't hate paying taxes. I've seen people go to the utmost extremes to avoid paying taxes. And that is spending money on things that they generally do not need. I'm talking about large sums of money on things that they don't need, that they can justify it being for their business. They would rather put it there than give it to the government. Because at least they know it, even though it's wasted on their behalf and not the government's. But the federal government really has no incentive to bring down an inflation rate that is not killing people. It's very uncomfortable for people, but it's not like, you know, unemployment's still high or still low. Sorry. Unemployment is still very low, falling. There's jobs, apparently. You know, so when you look at all the economic measures, inflation is the only thing that seems bad, right? So the government has no incentive to reduce it. Therefore, they can pressure the Federal Reserve into trying to not raise interest rates, even though the Federal Reserve hasn't listened to them. And they can also make an argument like, we need to increase the debt ceiling. We need to take out more debt so we don't default. Now, I'm going to read an article on some options that the government has in dealing with the potential debt crisis. And this is from, who wrote this? This is it didn't even tell me. The Economist. It says there's a couple solutions that they can utilize to try and get around this. And the first one is, the first action would actually render the debt ceiling moot, it says. At least in theory. It says, one that has captured the imagination of wonks, owing to its novelty, is a $1 trillion coin. The Treasury can mint a commemorative coin of any denomination. The suggestion, first advanced on a blog in 2010, is that it should mint a hugely valuable coin, deposit it in the government's account at the Federal Reserve, and draw on it to pay for everything from military salaries to scientific research. The government would no longer need borrowing approval from Congress. Indeed, it would no longer need to borrow from public markets. Another idea is that the White House could deploy the 14th Amendment. This is one I was talking about before, of the Constitution, which states that the validity of American government debt shall not be questioned. The Biden administration could issue an executive order citing the 14th Amendment and directing the Treasury to resume issuing bonds so long as upheld in court. The White House would, in effect, have branded the debt ceiling as unconstitutional, giving itself a free hand. A final magical solution would involve financial engineering. The debt ceiling specifically targets the face value of debt. As current yields, the Treasury can borrow money for 2 years at an annual rate of about 4%. But what if it offered bonds with coupons of, say, 100%? Now, remember I said if interest rates increase, the value of the bonds decrease, right? So if a bond was issued with a coupon of, let's say, 100%, that gives the face value of the bond roughly 1/25 of a bond with a 4% yield. So it'd be about, you know, it'd be very, very, very minimal face value, almost worthless. But it would raise the same amount of cash from investors who would pay a giant premium to the face value, bringing the bond's true yield in line with the market value rate. As a treasury rolled over existing debts into high coupon, low face value bonds, it would acquire plenty of room under the debt ceiling, allowing it to resume borrowing. These magical workarounds are all clever, yet they also share the same basic defects. They are, to varying degrees, ruses and loopholes that do not seem befitting of American government bonds, the world's most important financial asset. It would be unsettling to think the treasuries, a benchmark for interest rates and a safe haven for investors the world over, could be underpinned by a commemorative coin. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, has dismissed the option as a gimmick. Also gimmicky would be better than American government reneging on its debt. There is another objection to such magical solutions. Each would be subject to legal challenge, sowing uncertainty in the markets. Some experts think that the administration could win a 14th Amendment case, but that is far from certain in a Supreme Court with a conservative majority. Legal proceedings could extend beyond the moment. Sorry, my reading is terrible. Perhaps early in June, when the government runs out of money, stuck in litigation, the magical solutions would struggle to prevent market freakouts. If you go on the White House website, they actually have a chart showing the increase in the purchases of CDSs or credit default swaps. Credit default swaps is what, what's the guy from The Big Short, Michael Burrow, I think. That's what he purchased in 2008 and got filthy rich on because the market collapsed, right? You're basically gambling and betting that the market or whatever you're purchasing the credit default swap on is going to basically tank. And again, this is in layman's terms. So if the U.S. were to default on its debt, there's going to be a few people who get filthy rich from it. There always is. Can you blame them? It depends who it is. If it's a politician, they should be hung. If it's someone with inside knowledge, they should be hung as well. If it's someone who's just taking a gamble and making a well-informed decision, you know, it is what it is. But the real solution to this would be stop fucking spending so much money. Cut down regulation, which, by the way, costs a substantial amount of money. They need to cut Social Security substantially. If not eliminate Social Security, I've always said they need to phase it out anyway. Social Security is the biggest debt obligation the U.S. has, and it's not even close. Do we need to cut military spending? No. You know, we spend more on healthcare, and we don't even really have a healthcare system hardly, other than Medicare in the U.S. We spend more on healthcare than we do the military. We spend more on healthcare than every other country in the world. And that's relatively, not dollar amount. That's percentage-wise. So it's not the military that's killing us. The military, we need the military. The military is not the problem. Social Security and other forms of welfare programs are the issue. And it's not even close. Regulations are the issue. The government needs to take its hand out of the economy and let the free market do what the free market does. But I think that ultimately what you're going to see is it's going to either be suspended for further negotiation, or it's going to be increased because they're going to come out with something and the Republicans are going to get something that they want. Maybe the Democrats will cut a little bit of spending. The Republicans won't get everything they want, but again, you know, it's political negotiation. It's, we'll scratch your back if you scratch ours. The Biden administration does not want the U.S. to default. No one wants the U.S. to default. However, it is going to happen sooner or later. It is. It's, should you let it just happen now, or should you let it happen later when you owe even more money? The responsible thing is just cut spending. Stop spending so much money. Don't take out debt you can't pay back. And this thing of, oh, well, we can pay it back because we can just print more money. We're going down a road, again, of what is called modern monetary theory, where the government can basically print as much money as it wants with no constraint and pay for whatever it wants to pay for via, let's say, universal healthcare or anything. It doesn't matter what it is. If they want to spend $2 trillion, they'll just print $2 trillion and spend it. There's no, truly no backing. And to eliminate inflation, they will increase taxation. So taxation, again, becomes not a way of paying for expenditures, but a way to manipulate the value of the currency. You know, if you have too much money and a set amount of goods or too few amount of goods, right, you have inflation. So if everyone has $1,000 in their pocket, $1,000 is nothing. If everyone has $1 million in their pocket, $1 million is nothing. That's why you have countries who, you know, you'll pay a fucking million pesos for a Coke. I don't know. I'm just saying. But that's also why a universal basic income of, let's say, $2,000 a month would just set a new basis of $2,000 being the new zero. $2,000 wouldn't get you anything. Inflation would increase to the point and adjust itself up to the point where there's a new level of what is valuable. You know, what it would just set a new standard. Years ago, $10 would get you a lot. Now $10 won't even get you enough gas to get to the next pump. So these are things that people got to think about. I think that we emphasize other issues in our country, like who Kim Kardashian is fucking now, then, and we don't emphasize the important things. And that's the financial standing of our government, policies that our government is introducing. And it's sad. It's very sad. We need to teach this stuff in school, and we don't. And there's reasons why they don't. I'm not going to get into. But every country needs to teach this stuff in school. By the way, I'm in Australia right now, right? I don't know if people realize here in this country, if the U.S. defaults on its debt, it's not only affecting the U.S. It's affecting the entire world because this isn't like Greece when they defaulted on their debt. They had the rest of the European Union, some countries of which were much larger than Greece's, like GDP-wise, they just bailed them out, right? Who is going to bail out the United States? China can't bail out the United States. They're having their own problems. No one can bail out the United States unless they do it as a whole, and that will just – it won't happen. It's kind of like the idea if – you know, the United States falls, like if the United States, let's say, was invaded and taken over, who do we call on for help? No one, because by that time, everyone else has already been taken over as well. We're the last line of defense. We're the backbone of the entire world's economy, including China's. By the way, China doesn't own the majority of our debt. The United States citizens owns the vast majority of the debt. The debt is also linked into your savings accounts, a lot of annuities that elderly people have, your safe investments. Let's say like a savings account, where do you think the interest rate comes from? A lot of it comes from your bank investing in these treasury securities. Money market accounts, right? Like all of that is backed by U.S. treasuries. It affects everyone. By the way, we're not even going to go down the road of if the market completely collapses, retirement accounts are completely fucked. And again, not just in the US, but everywhere. If the French think, you know, oh, I can't believe I got to work two more years to get whatever pension fund they have. If they think that's a problem, wait till the U.S. defaults on their debt. France damn sure ain't going to be able to pay out pensions. The United States damn sure ain't going to be able to pay out Social Security. Why? The difference between something like this happening and like in 2008, the U.S. didn't default on debt. Therefore, the U.S. was able to come out with their stimulus packages and kind of, it didn't really help the economy, but they say it does, right? They usually do it after the economy is already recovering. But they wouldn't be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to stimulate anything. The dollar would be worthless. Inflation would skyrocket. And eventually, the economy, you know, pending we don't have any wars or anything like that, which could, you know, I think arise out of this, if it was just left alone, would eventually recover. It would take a while, but it would recover. Economies do. They go up and down cycles. But we would need a lot smarter way of going about our financial dealings. But the moral of the story is we just need to hold our government responsible for paying back their own debt, no different than we hold ourselves responsible for doing so. If you as an individual is expected to pay back your debt obligations, then the government damn sure should be. The problem is that they make things so complicated. They have fractional banking. They have so many complicated ways of going about how they borrow money and spend money and all that stuff. It needs to be simplified. If it was simple, keep it simple, stupid, we'd be a lot better off. A lot better off. This is one thing that conservatives have over the left. And it's financial responsibility. And they haven't, the problem is that the conservatives have, and I don't know if it's because they're just, you know, the ones that have been elected to Congress are just a bunch of fakes, or they just hadn't been in a position where they've had free rein to, initiate like their kind of ideology. But as far as what conservatives talk about and stand for, they have a huge advantage over the left when it comes to finance. But we need to actually practice what we preach as conservatives instead of using it just for our own political gain when we have candidates in office. And that's what's stupid, right? It's all about staying in office instead of actually just saying, you know, taking one for the fucking team. Saying, I'm here for 4 years. I'm doing what I need to do, what's best for the country for 4 years, regardless of how it makes me look. But we don't have that. We never have. Neither side has. So, again, there will be a video on YouTube about this here later. And we're going to end it there. We will be back on tomorrow. And again, go subscribe to the YouTube channel. Share the podcast. Comment, you know, I'd like to hear back. Give me feedback. I'm trying to get better. All right. I always get nervous when I go to start these podcasts. I always have. When I go to make videos, it takes me a while to actually get started. I'm camera shy. I'm kind of mic shy, you know. It's weird, but I do enjoy doing it. So give me feedback so I can get better and make the production quality a lot better for you guys. Give me suggestions. Give me ideas. If there's anything you want me to talk about, let me know. I would, you know, if you want to come on the show, let me know. If you want to do a one-on-one, I want to find interviews. So I'm open to any idea that is going to increase the value of what I'm giving you guys, you know, as far as content. So let me know. We will see you tomorrow. And thank you.